From the best-selling Christian Heroes Then and Now series, YWAM Publishing presents Count Zinzendorf, First Fruit, by Janet and Jeff Benge. Read for you by Tim Gregory. For information about other titles in this outstanding series, please visit our website at ywampublishing.com or call us at 800-922-2143. Chapter 1. Disappointed, but never deterred. They met few people out here. There were no roads, no castles, no bustling towns, just rolling green hills covered with vegetation, so different from Europe. Back in Saxony, Count Ludwig von Zinzendorf would have been riding in the luxury of a carriage. But here, deep in Indian country, he rode on horseback. Guided by Chief Skikelemi and several braves, Ludwig and his companions wound their way up Pennsylvania's Wyoming Valley, riding steadily toward the home of the Shawnee Indians in the valley's upper reaches. As he rode, Ludwig thought of all the wonderful things that might come from this long journey. He hoped to negotiate with the Shawnees for permission for missionaries to enter their tribal land and live and work among them. All went well as the party made their way along the Susquehanna River, until they forded a creek. Halfway across the creek, the girth strap on Ludwig's saddle broke, and Ludwig tumbled backward from his horse into the frigid water, his saddle landing on top of him. Chief Skikelemi and the braves burst into uproarious laughter. Martin Mack, one of Ludwig's traveling companions, rushed to Ludwig's aid, lifted the saddle from him, and pulled him to his feet.
"My poor brother," Ludwig apologized in embarrassment. "I am an endless source of trouble."
Martin clapped Ludwig on the back.
"The way is treacherous," he countered. "It could easily have happened to anyone. You stand aside, and I'll take a look at your saddle."
Once the saddle had been repaired and put back on his horse, Ludwig mounted up, and the group continued on. They traveled for several more days, stopping in the evening to pitch their tents and prepare a meal from the meager supplies they carried with them. At last they reached a cluster of Shawnee villages. Since Ludwig imagined that it would take a number of days to win the confidence of the Shawnees, he paid closer attention than usual to where he pitched his tent. Finally he chose what seemed to be a good site, about 20 yards from his companions' tents. All went well the first night. The following day, Ludwig sat on his bedroll and spread his books and papers on the ground in front of him. He jotted down several verses of a hymn he was composing, and then picked up his journal and began making an entry for the day. As he wrote, a small movement caught his eye. He ignored it. Soon, a huge snake was slithering across the papers spread in front of him. Ludwig froze. What should he do? He had no idea. He dared not breathe as he waited for the snake to strike him. The creature simply ignored Ludwig and continued across the papers, disappearing out under the side of the tent. Ludwig let out a deep breath and put down his pen. Then, without any warning, the scene repeated itself as a second snake glided over the papers and disappeared outside. As soon as the snake was gone, Ludwig leaped up and bolted from his tent. He begged several Indians to come and see where the snakes were coming from, but he did not anticipate their reaction. They checked around inside his tent and then burst into gales of laughter. One of the Indians pointed to a hole in the ground.
"You have pitched your tent over the mouth of a snake den," he said, shaking his head in disbelief. "Either you get used to the snakes or you'll have to move."
Ludwig felt himself turning red with embarrassment. Back in Saxony, no one ever laughed at him. They wouldn't have dared. Besides, he seldom made mistakes like this. In Saxony, he owned a castle and did not have to worry about scratching around for a good site to pitch a tent. Despite his humiliation, Count Zinzendorf was undeterred. He had come on a mission to negotiate with the Shawnees, and that was what he was going to do. As Ludwig began to talk with the Shawnee chiefs, it soon became obvious that his negotiations were going nowhere. The Shawnees did not trust him, no matter how hard he tried to convince them that he had come in peace as a friend. Ludwig also noticed that Chief Skekelemy and the Braves with him were growing suspicious of the Shawnees' intentions. Deeply frustrated by the situation, Ludwig sat in his tent one night and poured out his heart to God in prayer, asking him what he should do. The next day, Conrad Weiser, a man Ludwig had befriended in the colony, arrived at the Shawnee village. He was a well-known mediator and interpreter between Indians and whites. He was also well-respected by the Shawnees, and he was able to quickly size up the situation. That evening, Conrad and Ludwig sat by the fire and talked.
You were in great danger, Count Zinzendorf, Conrad began. The Shawnees were preparing to kill you all.
Ludwig's mouth dropped open.
Why? He stammered. I have done them no harm.
The Shawnees believe that you were an agent of people who want to get their hands on the silver deposits located in their territory. So they had decided the best thing for them to do was kill you all as a message to others who might come seeking their silver. I managed to convince them that you have no such intentions, that you have no interest in their silver, just their souls.
You are an answer to prayers, my friend, Ludwig exclaimed.
Perhaps, Conrad replied. But I am afraid I have been unable to change the Shawnees' minds regarding your request to send missionaries among them. On that, they steadfastly refuse.
What are we to do, then?
Ludwig asked. Conrad said. Perhaps time will change things.
Und prayer, Ludwig added.
The following day, the party packed up, and Conrad led them back the way they had come. As they rode along, Ludwig was disappointed that things had not gone as well with the Shawnees as he had hoped. But his zeal was not dampened. He believed that, in time, the Shawnees would have a change of heart and invite missionaries to come and live among them and teach them. As the narrow trail led them back alongside the Susquehanna River, Ludwig thought back to his privileged life in Saxony. If his grandmother could see him now, in his muddy buckskins, with uncombed hair, and with only a few meager rations in his knapsack. She had preened and prepared him for life in the royal court in Dresden. But here he was, laying aside all that ease and privilege to be the first European nobleman to leave behind the edges of North American civilization and travel deep into Indian country. His life had certainly taken many unexpected detours from the course that was mapped out for him growing up in Saxony.